Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. I should begin by telling you that my name is Colin, and I am joined, as I always am, by Dom. Dom, how are you doing today?
I'm great. Hey, guys.
Yeah, so today we are going to be going over the latest episodes of Survivor and The Amazing Race, and also a new addition to the show, we're going to be talking about one of our favorite sitcoms, Community, which just came back on the air. So we're going to be getting to all that today, and then also at some point in the future, we may or may not be doing Celebrity Apprentice. I've been watching. I know Dom hasn't, but Dom, I highly recommend that you do watch, and hopefully we can get to that soon.
Sure.
Just to get all these episodes for all these shows we're doing, definitely make sure you subscribe to the show on iTunes, and those will automatically update to your computer as soon as Dom puts them up on iTunes. So let's get right into Survivor if you're ready.
Yeah, sure. Let's go for it.
Thanks for the enthusiasm. All right, and now once again, This is a scene, the opening scene this week was another one that I thought, you know, we try to save the editing and the heavier lifting stuff for the end of our episodes, but I thought this first scene, you know, this is obviously episode 5, and this is the episode that we're expecting to see a swap, and the very first line of the scene, while they're still men versus women, is Sabrina opening saying, "It's a new game, baby," and then the opening scene itself is actually Troy's Ann over talking to the women's tribe, and I thought this was, you know, like we've mentioned, we've seen these big characters come out over the course of the season. And probably at the top of that list at this point is Troyzan. Maybe Kim, but, you know, we see him talking to Kat, we see him talking to Christina. Troyzan certainly developed into one of the bigger characters this season, and we've seen him get along well with the women, and this first scene is no exception to that. And you know, we get another line from Sabrina before we go to the Survivor theme song that says, you know, the guy's tribe is more of a mess than we thought. And then we get Alicia saying, you know, they are so dumb, they handed us $1 million. And then we go to the theme song. So, Dom, did you have any opening thoughts about this opening scene?
Well, firstly, I thought it was interesting that they showed Troyzan talking to the women and not any of the others, because presumably during that stretch of time, all of the men, or at least most of the men, would have been talking to women at some point. But I thought it was interesting that they keep showing Troyzan interacting favorably with the women as compared to the rest of the men. Secondly, when we recorded during the first few episodes, we said that we thought the women were just being buried by the editors, and that suggested that a man was more likely to take home the win. Over the past few episodes, though, particularly last episode and in the recap this episode, we've seen that they're more on an even footing now, because the men are being portrayed as making a stupid decision by forfeiting immunity and going to tribal council. So going into this episode, it seems that the men and the women are even, and we have to sort of look at everyone anew again. Of course, this gets changed when we have a swap, and now we have two new tribes, with two new sets of dynamics, and what we see this episode is the editors just hate the new Monono tribe. The constant theme of the episode was a contrast between Solani, which has all the strong, fit, intelligent people. They're going really well, they're working hard at camp. Then on the other side we have Monono, who is dysfunctional, full of stupid people, terrible at challenges, terrible at camp life, so on. Suggests to me that the winner comes from the new Solani tribe, which, you know, given that it contains Kim, Sabrina, Jay, Troyzan, we probably suspected anyway, but now I think we have confirmation for that. It probably doesn't bode well for us if the Jonas is on Monono now.
That's right. Yeah, I was going to add, I think Jonas is the only one of our big winner candidates that ended up on the new Monono. You know, I heard Jeff pronouncing it Monono, and I'm sure I'll make every attempt to pronounce it correctly, but I'm sure many, many times I'll be saying Monono.
Jonas actually had a pretty good episode, I thought, because he had that confessional where he outlined his strategy saying, yeah, I know that I'm going to be Colton's bitch, but I'm going to do that because it takes me further in the game. On the other hand, though, Colton's been portrayed so negatively that anyone who's tied to him is tainted by association, I think, in the eyes of the viewers. So I'm not sure that Jonas' future is that bright, to be honest.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned that the first few episodes, it seemed like the women were just getting absolutely buried by the editors, and that's completely done a 180 at this point, and it's been a very quick turnaround. To the point that now I would concur and we're probably going to see a winner from the new Solani. But it seems clear to me, at least at this point, that we're not supposed to have a ton of faith in the men in terms of as a whole, as a group.
Right. The only men who seem to be shielded from all that negativity are the ones on Solani. So Troyzan, Jay, and to a lesser extent Mike, I guess, although Mike's been a kind of peripheral character so far. So I'm not sure he's really in that discussion.
Yeah, I think Mike's been a little bit too quiet this whole season to really be in the discussion at this point, at least. He's certainly, you know, he's still in the game, so anything can happen.
Which is a shame, because he seems like a pretty cool guy, pretty smart, actually. You know, we saw him maneuver his way out of a potentially thorny situation last episode, and it seems like he's got kind of a raw deal so far. That might change, obviously, but he doesn't seem to be in a great spot at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, obviously his big mistake, I think, was teaming up with Matt so early and making it, and Matt kind of doing a lot. He's getting a lot of residual damage left over, I think, from Matt Quinlan. And anyway, so, you know, we get to the reward challenge, and no surprise to any of us, it is swap time. And as we mentioned, just to briefly run down the new tribes for those of you who don't remember all the people, the new Solani tribe, which is now kind of, as Colton described them, the Greek god tribe, is Kim, Chelsea, Sabrina, Kat, and then Michael, Troy, Zane, and Jay. So you have a group of four of those seven. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
So basically, six Greek gods and Kat.
Well, I take issue with that statement. But yeah, I think, and just obviously by process of elimination, that means the new Monano is Colton, Tarzan, Leaf, Jonas, Alicia, Christina, and Monica. And I would agree. I think if you were to swap Monica and Kat there, the tribes could not possibly be any more distorted or unfair in terms of physical challenges. I'm not going to tolerate much Kat slander on this podcast, though. Actually, you know what? I probably should, because I've been reading a bit on, like, Survivor Sucks About Us, because I'm a big narcissist, which is, I'm sure, is a massive shock to everyone listening. And we do need to disagree more, and I think this is an issue where we do disagree, so I'm happy to have the Kat debate. But, yeah, I certainly like Kat, and she's actually someone I wanted to talk about a little later in the show.
So, I like Kat. She seems like a fine person, but she's just not... The idea that you have that she's somehow drawing life to win is ridiculous to me. It's just, how is this even going to happen? It's like, if the stars magically collide and she ends up in the final three with, like, Colton and Alicia or something, like, maybe she has a chance, but how is that going to happen?
Listen, you say, you make that statement, and everyone makes that statement as if Nicaragua just never happened. This is an identical edit to a winner edit we've seen before. I'm not trying to say that she's any kind of favorite, but I can't believe so many people are thinking she's drawing dead.
I mean, if I weren't such a pussy, I'd lay out, but let's not get into that.
Yeah, sure.
Going back to the swap a minute, we see, as has been sort of customary in past seasons with swaps, they do it by essentially a process of random draw. So everyone takes an egg, they break it, and whoever gets a certain color is on the tribe of the other people of that same color and so on. Do you like that, or do you prefer some kind of schoolyard pick, or the thing that they did in Vanuatu, actually, where one person divides the tribes and then the other one picks?
I think random is probably better and more fair to everyone, just because no one has an advantage there, whereas in certain situations, like with you mentioned in Vanuatu, Scout and Sarge, which we talked with Chris Doherty about, Scout got to literally pick who was on each tribe, and Sarge got to pick which tribe he joined. I'm more of a fan of the random, but in this instance, it didn't work out. And I think schoolyard pick, I think in terms of fairness of the game, random is better, but in terms of how interesting it is and how complicated it is, I think schoolyard pick has a lot more to expose from a game level.
Right. If we think back to the sort they did in Vanuatu, obviously that format is going to lead to tribes which are hideously unbalanced in terms of the alliance structure and things, because if you get to decide who's on which tribe, then you can set it up so that no matter which tribe the other person picks, you're set up in a pretty good position. At the same time, though, it might be nice to have that because it rewards people who are able to think on the fly about where people should go and construct that kind of, and run through all those scenarios in their head. Same kind of thing with the swap in Gabon, actually, where the tribes had to rank their members on a list, essentially, from best to worst, if you want to phrase it like that. And then they got to choose alternating between the two tribes. And what we saw then was Kenny making a pretty good move where everyone on his tribe was urging him to choose somebody else, and he chose Kelly because he realized that, look, she was nominated by her tribe to be at the bottom, so she's clearly not seen as valuable to them. We can pick her up and bring her into our alliance. That's someone else we're going to have on our side. So I think having a non-random format like that leads to people who are thinking about the game being able to make moves proactively and improve their position.
Yeah, and I would concur with that. I mentioned the egg thing. I think it's just in general going to be more fair because there are going to be a lot of situations like with Scout and Sarge where the people who are at the top of their tribes are going to be the captains or whatever. Yeah, I was about to bring up Gabon, actually, and I thought that was probably the best tribe swap in terms of entertainment and in terms of giving the good players room to maneuver. But I think if that became a standard, then people would start adjusting to it. And that may be just me giving the players too much credit in terms of thinking about the game, just considering that we see now a lot of people who haven't seen the previous seasons get cast. But yeah, Gabon, I really loved what they did, but I think they can't do that every time. And I honestly, as long as there is a tribe swap, I'm just happy to see the tribes get swapped and have things get mixed up. If it leaves room for the good players to improve their position, I'm obviously for that, but I'm totally fine with random as well, I guess.
I think the swapping Gabon was a great example of how people just make basic mistakes all the time. I think about it. Like, if I'm on either one of those tribes, let's say I'm on Kota there, I am ranking the other members of my alliance as low as I possibly can to make sure that there's a higher chance that we don't have the situation as happened where, for instance, Kelly, who has just seen her closest ally get voted out, is placed at the bottom, and, you know, what is she supposed to think about that? You know, whereas, yeah, I'm not going to take it as a blow to my self-esteem if I'm put at the bottom as a means to, you know, mislead the other tribe into thinking that the alliances on my tribe are different than they are.
Yeah, the thing is, I think everyone filled out those surveys individually, and I think you kind of got to get on you got to see that kind of tribe swap coming and get on the same page about that.
Right, but if you're aware of how the other people in your alliance think, which you should be since you're on alliance with them, you might be able to realize that, hey, they're just going to rank people how they think they ought to be ranked, like in the order they think they're actually most deserving. And if you do that, then that's just a recipe for disaster if the swap goes the way we don't want it to. So, you know, you have to put a kind of buffer up there in that situation. So I have to imagine that production were not happy with the outcome of the swap, and I think this proved, or if not proved, at least suggests that they weren't rigging this at all, because this was not the outcome that they were hoping for, I imagine.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously pretty difficult to rig when people are drawing from eggs. But I completely agree with you that production's probably not thrilled with this swap. Also, especially because, as we've seen now, because of the new tribes, an existing alliance has majority in both, a pre-existing alliance already has majority in both tribes.
Right, but even more than that, if you think about the people who are on the outs in each tribe, so the people who a swap might potentially help, we have on the women, Christina and Monica, and then from the men we have Mike. And all three of those were put into a minority position in their new tribe, so we're probably not going to see new alliances being formed with those two, or with Mike on Solani. It's just going to be the same as it was before, but a slightly different cast.
All right, so let's move on now to the reward challenge itself. It's this, we've seen many variations of fill a bucket up with water, and it's going to drip out slowly as you're trying to move that water to somewhere else. Solani goes on to win, and it was actually closer than I anticipated. And they win peanut butter and jelly. Now, the thing that I thought was remarkable about the reward challenge, really, was Jeff's announcement that the tribes were no longer going to be living in the One World format, which, actually, I'll let you go first. What'd you think about that?
Yeah, I hated this. I understand why they did it to some extent. I think there are two main reasons. Firstly, we've seen in the past, or rather reproduced, that whenever there's a tribe swap, it's almost always beneficial for at least one, if not both tribes, to throw every subsequent challenge off that, or at least some subsequent challenges. And production don't want that. It's fine as a one-off thing, like in China we saw Jamie and PG throwing the challenge, and that was pretty fun to watch. But when every challenge becomes a race to see who can lose it the quickest, that's not what production want, it's not what the viewers want. If both tribes are still living on the same beach, that becomes much easier to coordinate, because now, let's say I'm Monica or Christina, and I'm in the minority in Monono. I can see if I can form new alliances within my tribe, and if I don't feel safe, I can run over to Kim and Sabrina and say, look, we're not safe, we need you to throw the challenge, you have majority, and just protect us, we can get promoted and team up again. And I'll be able to do that. And similarly, with the men, if Mike finds that he's unable to swing Chelsea or whatever over to his side, he can go over to Colton and say, but Colton, if we get tribal council, the men are being voted out, can you throw the challenge, vote out one of the women, we can team back up the merge, and so on. So it prevents that sort of thing from happening as easily. Secondly, I think, to be frank, I think the production doesn't give much credit to the audience, and they thought, well, the tribes have just been divided by men and women. If now we swap them up and have them still living on the same beach together, then the viewers are going to get confused. So we have to at least give some sort of indication as to which tribe people are on that doesn't lead to that kind of confusion.
Yeah, I think those are both actually good points. You know, there was talk about that preseason about men versus women and One World coinciding, and one of the theories about that was that when everyone's living on the same beach, the viewers are going to be confused, and men versus women is an easy way for them to tell them apart. So Stallone gets the reward. They get peanut butter and jelly, and they get to live at the One World Beach. And over at Stallone Camp, we now see kind of this new alliance, some sort of forming between Troy, Zan, and Jay, and then Kim and Chelsea. And we see Kim saying that, you know, she wants to have as many options as possible post-merge, where if the women go into the post-merge with the numbers, she can just join back up with them and be fine. And if the women don't go into the post-merge with numbers, she still has Jay and Troy, Zan. And she can just say, oh, I've been with you guys ever since we swapped. What'd you think about this budding alliance of some of the front runners?
I think it makes sense for all of them to put feelers out and try and at least give the appearance of trying to form new alliance with people, because you need to have a contingency plan in place in case, you know, your tribe goes to the merge with a minority. And I think Kim played this pretty perfectly, to be honest. Especially, I think one of the things that's been unstated is the way in which she subtly undermines Chelsea with the men, where she says, well, Chelsea's not really playing the game, I trust her, she's not a threat to you. That's something which is going to leave a mark in the minds of the men, so that later, potentially, if Kim and Chelsea are in front of a jury, they're going to think that, well, Chelsea hasn't really been playing the game at all, and why are they going to think that? Well, because Kim has subtly nagged her a few weeks previously, and has been sort of setting this up for a long time. I think this is pretty well played on the part of, whether or not she should have tried to team up with Mike instead is an interesting question, I think, because if you have time to work out what the dynamics of the previous men's tribe were, you realize, well, Mike's on the outs, we can maybe snap up him, because he has more incentive to sit with us than Troy, Sam, and Jay do. But, you know, without being there and having access to that information, she seems to play it pretty well.
Yeah, the concern I have is now if Stallone does end up somehow losing, clearly they're going to want, I think Kim and Chelsea would be in their best interest to be getting rid of a man, just so they can maintain, because, you know, they also have Sabrina and Kat, so if they, by getting rid of a woman, that would be one of those two, which would look bad for everyone else. But now, by positioning themselves in this alliance with Troyzen and Jay, that means that that man must be Michael, and he, like you mentioned, was the one on the outs and probably the most likely to truly stay loyal to them post-merge.
Right, and now you only have one person as a buffer, so after Mike's gone, you have to either vote out Kat, which jeopardizes your majority, or vote out Troy or Jay, at which point the other one knows that the deal that you made with them is fake. So if they had brought in Mike instead, then they would have had to go to more than two tribal councils for that to become an issue, which is unlikely given how many tribal councils are likely to be left until the merge, so maybe two or three, and given the fact that they've just been crushing the challenges and probably going to continue to do that.
Yeah, it's weird. You know, when the tribes get switched up, you see a lot of people, especially this season, I noticed, everyone was like, oh, yeah, at least everyone on Solani. Manana will be getting to certainly in a minute. They were not so thrilled about their new tribe. But with Solani, they all seemed really psyched, and I guess that's for good reason when you know that you're probably going to be a massive favorite to win every challenge. But, I, when we talked to Chris Doherty, he said that once they switched up tribes, even though it was probably definitely in his best interest to be throwing the immunity challenges, because he had majority and could just be picking off the women in his own tribe, it never even crossed his mind. And I think that's something that goes through a lot of players' heads, which is, you know, this is my new tribe. We're going to try to win and do whatever we can. And there's not really that long-term or intertribal dynamics that people take into consideration right off the bat.
Right. At the same time, though, now that they've won the first challenge, we've got 13 people left. So we either have one person left to go until the merge or three people left. And I think Solani can pretty safely assume that they're going to win two of the next three challenges. Immunity challenges, just given the makeup of the tribe. So I don't think that the difficulties we highlighted are going to be an issue at all.
Yeah, and something we actually jumped over is right after the tribe swap, after the reward challenge, they before cutting to Solana, we actually see Manano's reaction after having lost the challenge. And Colton is not thrilled. And we get a series of confessionals from both Colton and Alicia about how just pathetic their new tribe is. And I think one of the good things that we see to demonstrate kind of the differences between the new tribes is production decides to release another chicken on each beach, basically. And Troyzan has no problem wrangling. It turns out it was a rooster. I hope they named it Matt, which I think is a joke everyone has made by now.
It sounded even less funny when you said it, though.
I know. I have a way of doing that kind of thing. And then, meanwhile, over at Manano, they also get a new chicken, and they manage to catch it and get it into a cage that is on the ground, and the chicken seemingly, without even much effort, gets out of the cage and just escapes and walks away, and there's nothing, we don't see them at least catch it again. I thought it was kind of an interesting juxtaposition because you see Solani so thrilled about their new tribe, and then they easily catch this chicken and everything's going, you know, everything's coming up roses for the blue team, and not so much for the orange or red, orange team, I guess they are.
Yeah.
The next thing we see over at Solani camp is Kim going out idol hunting, and that's something that typically is kind of a negative, but I think Kim managed to do it in such a way that seemed to be discreet, a la like Boston Rob. In season 22, she managed to do it without anyone really noticing and ended up finding the idol. And I was wondering when someone was going to find that second idol, and I'm glad Kim was the one who ended up founding it. And now what I thought was interesting is she went and immediately showed it to Chelsea. And now you had a post on the 2+2 thread that I actually really liked and agreed with. Do you want to kind of go through what your thoughts are about in terms of finding the idol and sharing who to share it with?
Right. It seems like there are a few approaches that people take to the idol. The first is that they find someone who they think they can trust, and they reveal the idol to them to cement that bond with them. The thing is, though, if that person trusts you enough that you're willing to do that with them in the first place, you probably don't need to show them the idol. The only thing you're accomplishing by doing that is setting yourself up for a fall if, you know, something weird happens and that person drifts away from you or whatever. Now, that person has the knowledge of the idol, which they can use against you. Alternatively, you can do what Colton did, which is use the idol to intimidate a group of people in devoting with you. But again, in that case, if you need the idol to make them do that, then you're probably in a bad position long term anyway, because those people don't trust you on, you know, on your own merits. They trust you because of something which you have and something which you might have to use in the future, at which point that relationship is on rocky ground now. So the benefits of revealing the idol to people are often overstated. I think we see people do it too often. Obviously, the fact that Kim has it, though, is great news for her. I think she was in a great position already, and now, as long as nothing weird happens, I think she's a lock to go deep and possibly win.
And I thought, you know, something that stood out to me is, and this may have actually come, this is a quote that I, during my rewatch, wrote down, that it may or may not have been actually before she found the idol. But she said, you know, and I think she said, I know this game is going to have its moments in terms of there are going to be some rough times out here, but this is not one of them. This is, everything's going well right now. And I think that's a fantastic perspective to have in terms of like that approach. Because people are often reluctant to acknowledge the amount of like luck and variance in Survivor that every single winner in Survivor history has had to deal with, every winner's had stressful situations. And I think for Kim to go into the game knowing that not everything's going to be just smooth sailing is a huge benefit for her, that she's able to compartmentalize like that. And I thought that was an outstanding quote from her and a fantastic approach to the game in general.
Yeah, for sure. That's the sort of thing which we can imagine them showing in the winners montage of the reunion.
Absolutely, absolutely. So let's get right into the immunity challenge, and this is a challenge we've seen before. This is, as Stephen Fishback described it on Twitter, the basket brawl challenge that he played in Token Jeans, and that we also saw in Heroes vs. Villains. And this is probably, if you're Leaf, not the challenge that you want to be seeing, or if you're Russell Hance.
Right. I thought that was a great scene where, in the matchup where Leaf is paired against Mike, and Jeff said, there's a little height disparity here, as if nobody viewing had noticed it, and they needed Jeff to point that out. And even better, he didn't just say there's height disparity, he said there's a little height disparity. Just putting further emphasis where it really didn't need to be put.
Yeah, but you know what we saw actually as the game played out, Leaf was a beast in this, not so much on the offensive end, because he got, you know, Michael kind of burned him early just by throwing the ball over his head and then outrunning him.
Yeah, that was
pretty good. Because he's got those long legs in the water.
Yeah, but A-plus for effort for Leaf, I think. I mean, we saw him just latching himself onto someone's midsection, just trying to drag him into the water. Failing at every point, but, you know, clearly putting the work in.
Oh, I thought he did a great job. I don't think he failed at all in terms of his defensive efforts. I've played a lot of water basketball. One of my friends has a pool and a basketball hoop. So this is a challenge where I can lend my expertise quite well. And I can tell you that the place you want to be is right underneath the basket, just picking up the rebounds and just putting them right back in, which I couldn't believe, you know, in that round with Michael and Leaf, it was Michael and Leaf and then four girls. So Michael's got like a foot on everyone. He seems like a tall guy, and he's probably got a foot and a half on Leaf. And now he went 0-5, 0-6 or something at first on that shooting, and I thought that was embarrassing. But I thought Leaf absolutely did a great job defensively in this challenge. And I guess, you know, there may have been some editing tricks or whatever, but he at least got a shot on the net. And I thought that was fantastic, and I was honestly really thrilled to see Leaf perform so well.
Yeah, well, I thought it was interesting how Mike just went into beast mode for the first part of the challenge, just charging down the course, getting to the NPD efficacy and then just missing five baskets at close distance.
Well, it's a lot easier to burn a guy who's 4 feet tall, or not even, probably, I don't know how tall he is, actually. It's a lot easier to just throw a ball over his head and then outrun him in chasing it than it is to score a basket. But yeah, Mike, not an impressive offensive effort overall. You know, I think he scored two out of their three baskets, including the winning basket. Overall, he shot probably like 10% on goal. Anyway, so once again, we see Solani win the immunity, which is not a big surprise to anyone. And now let's talk about the Manano camp, because this is a camp, they're very dysfunctional and they are very aware of it. So let's go, we skipped over a bit of their stuff just in talking about Solani and in talking about leading up to this immunity challenge, because basically everything from here on out is going to be Manano. Because what we see is Colton now, the situation that I've kind of been dreading on behalf of the men, in terms of Colton's now in a position where he can flip to the women if he wants to. So what do you think about the new Manano tribe as they're heading to Tribal Council and about the dynamics within that tribe?
Okay, well, Colton is faced with an interesting decision here, because he can either sit with the Misfits and vote out one of the women, or flip over to the women and vote out one of the Misfits. I think he made the right decision ultimately for a few reasons. Firstly, because it's going to be easier for him to sit with the Misfits and vote out one of the women and still retain the trust of the other women than it is to do it the other way around. Like, if he flips over and votes out Lee, for instance, then Jonas is just burned on him completely. He's not going to trust him anymore. And possibly same thing with Tarzan, given that we know that Tarzan's big on loyalty or whatever. I imagine Colton will be able to convince Tarzan, but either way. Also, I think this makes a lot of sense because Colton, like, he doesn't know as much about the dynamics on the women's tribes. He does about the dynamics on the men's tribes, so, you know, he doesn't want to end up putting himself in a position where he's at the bottom of an alliance which isn't going to consider taking him further or whatever. Taking this route, he knows what his situation is.
Yeah, and you know, I think an important thing to note is we saw him talking a lot with Alicia, and he's trying immediately. I don't even know that Colton at any point, apart from fake, towards the very end of the episode, saying, oh, it's going to be Tarzan. But even talking with Alicia, who is obviously a big part of the female alliance, he was just trying to pitch her a Christina boot throughout, and then eventually turned that into a Monica boot, which we saw. But when we saw the Manano tribe, just the footage of them, before immunity, or before Tribal Council, excuse me, I was quite sure, just through over the course of the episode, that Colton was not going to be flipping to the women, which was shocking to me, because I thought, and I agree with you, actually, that it's a good game move for him, but I thought that whole time that that once he got the opportunity, he would be flipping with the women. And I think you make a good point, which is he can vote out a woman and still maintain some potential to work with the women down the road. But whereas if he votes out a man, the men are all pretty much done with him.
I'm not that surprised by it, actually, because I think most of the women that he felt closest to were on the other tribe, so Kim, Sabrina, potentially Chelsea, I guess, although we don't know much about that, but definitely Kim and Sabrina. Over here,
he said as much. Yeah.
Alicia, Christina, like, they're not going to be great long-term allies for him, unless, like, he puts a lot of work into it.
Yeah, he said, when they were doing the reactions to the egg splat, he said, you know, I smash orange, and then I look over, and Kim smashes blue, and Sabrina smashes blue, and Chelsea smashes blue. And he was upset about that, which leads me to believe, were this a different tribe swap, he absolutely would have flipped.
Yeah, and that, I think that's a good point to point out, just how four different people over the course of the episode said that they were either happy or unhappy about Kim being on Solani. Everyone on Solani was happy that she was there. People on Manoni were unhappy that she was there. I think this underscores just how good she is in with everybody at this point, which is pretty impressive. I mean, last season we said Coach was in a dominant position, like one of the most dominant positions of all time, and then he ended up punting it away. So I hesitate to say the same thing about Kim, but I think this is Kim's game to lose at this point.
I don't know. I think Troy's in is too strong at this point to really be discounting. With 13 people left to say that it's anyone's game to lose. With Coach, I think we even put it off until there were 12 or 11 left, just because there's just still so much that can happen before a merge.
Sure, but if you think about who's left in the game, a lot of them just are drawing complete dead to win. So Alicia, Colton, Tarzan, Kat, I'd argue, although obviously you disagree.
No way.
And then there are a few more who realistically aren't ever going to win. So people like Leaf, Jonas, not Jonas, but Chelsea, maybe Jonas, we're not sure. That only leaves a few people who have a legitimate shot at taking this down. And of those, Kim is the smartest, she's the most athletic, and she's in the great, she's in the best position in the game, and she has the idol. So she has at least a majority of the equity, I think.
Do you not mean plurality, or do you mean over 50%, or do you mean more than anyone else?
I think I mean over 50%.
Wow. That's big. Now, I mean, I certainly, if anyone had, I totally agree she has the most equity, but I don't think it's close to 50% at this point. I think you can still see. Yeah, go ahead.
And now we're probably going to see her getting medevac next episode, and I'm going to look like an idiot.
Then. Yeah. Yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, actually, what do you think about Colton's decision to vote out Monica as opposed to one of the other women?
I really agree with this thought process, and I wanted to mention, I thought Colton, over the last couple episodes, again, his social game is awful. In terms of long run, he's gonna never ever ever win a jury vote. But in terms of the short run, he's very good at getting. He says as much. He's like, oh, I can get anyone to believe me, and I think he did a great job of that with the women. And one of the things I noticed, basically my point I wanted to make is, I think Colton's actually playing a very strong tactical game over the last couple episodes, and I actually anticipate seeing that continue. He's making the right decisions, I think, in boot order, and I think. When the men gave up immunity, that was good basically only for him and maybe Jonas. But I thought one of the interesting things that I actually wanted to mention about Colton is when he's running around with the women, swearing to them that he's with them, he's saying, oh, pinky promise, and then you see him later dealing with Jonas and the guys, and he's saying, oh, fist bump, is like the reassurance thing.
Yeah, this is great. And this is actually a thing that Albert talked about when he came on the show with us, is like you have to tailor... you have to tailor the approach you're making to the audience you're speaking to. And I think here, like, if he had gone up to Matt and tried to make him a pinky promise, it probably wouldn't have worked. But going up to someone like Alicia and doing it, as corny as it is, it's probably the right approach there. Whereas, you know, if he goes around trying to fist bump all of the women, they're probably not going to be as amused by it.
Yeah, Albert, you know, mentioned the concept of NLP, which I hope I'm getting this right. I think it was neuro-linguistic programming, where he talks about, you know, that getting Brandon to give him the necklace was an example, where he said, you know, your heart, I feel like you've closed your heart to me, and he chose those words specifically. And I think Colton obviously made that same kind of conscious effort. Obviously, this is action and not words, but it's very similar to NLP, where he's saying, what's going to appeal to this individual? And I think he did a great job of that, and I thought it was actually a really good move on his, I thought it was interesting. I was glad the editors chose to include that, because I think that was done very intentionally, and I actually really liked the idea by Cole.
Right. I just want to say, given the way that this season has played out, with the Misfits taking over the men, and this younger women's alliance taking over the women, a guy in the Misfit alliance who gets on well with the women is in probably the best position of the game, and obviously we don't want to stereotype, but I think any half-decent gay player from past Survivor seasons would have been crushing in Colton's spot by now.
If you put in, like, Todd or Rafe or, I don't know about Richard Hatch about how he's going to fit in with that tribe, but yeah.
But even someone like Spencer, arguably, like, if he was able to be more assertive, sure. Just somebody in that position is just set up perfectly to get close to the game at this point.
This is actually something I wanted, because, you know, we've been trying to get Stephen Fish back on the show, and this is a complete tangent, FYI. Spencer, for those of you who don't know, was the like, not token gay guy. He was, at the time, the youngest player ever to play who just happened to be gay. He was 19 on season 18. He was on Token Chains. And what we saw was him go out pre-merge, and it was not really explained on the show, but from reading Stephen's interviews other places, he said Spencer was actually a hell of a player in terms of trying to make things happen and very aggressive, and I totally concur. I think if you swap in even not, I shouldn't say even Spencer, because I, from what I understand, he was actually a fairly decent player. He just had a very bad tribe draw. I think a lot of, and again, not to stereotype, but I think a lot of Survivor's historically great gay guys are absolutely destroying in this spot.
Yeah, for sure. Going back to the decision Colton made for that Monica, I like it even beyond the reasons that he gave in the show, because you want to find out what the alliance structure is like in the women's tribe. You know that potentially, if you vote out the wrong person here, then you could be strengthening an alliance that existed previously on the women's tribe, meaning that when a merge comes, they have numbers to take over. So you have to make your decision here very carefully, because you don't know, like, are all three of these women in the same alliance? Is only one of them in the original alliance, and there are two outsiders, or... You don't know what permutation exists there. But you know one thing, which is that Alicia and Christine have been at each other's throats almost from the moment you got there. So those two are unlikely to be in the same alliance. So you know that if you take out the other person, being Monica, you're probably going to leave in one of the people who's on the outs, if anybody was on the outs, which guarantees you a pretty decent spot.
Yeah, this is a situation. It's a concept that we see come up more frequently in Big Brother than Survivor. But this is a situation where I thought the concept of it's not about who you take out, it's about who you leave in, really applied. And I thought Colton put it well when he said, Christina has, like, no friends. And Christina's not going to be someone that's going to be a threat to you post-merge because she's not going to be able to rally any kind of support.
Right. It always talks to me when I see people say, oh, the tribe shouldn't have voted out Monica. She was their strongest player or whatever. Firstly, the tribe doesn't exist. The tribe is just a collection of individual players who happen to be within the same subset of people in the game. It's a meaningless construct. It doesn't exist beyond that. So to say that the tribe made a mistake, it doesn't make any sense because each person within that tribe has their own individual interests, and since it's Survivor, it's a zero-sum game, those interests are going to come into conflict. So, yeah, I think this is a fine decision for Colton. It may not have been a fine decision for some of the other people in the tribe, but it doesn't mean that the tribe itself made a bad decision. And I think the rationale that people give that Monica's the strongest player doesn't even matter because I think at this point they're resigned to the fact that they're going to keep losing challenges, and they're pretty close to the merge anyway, so this is a great time to take the opportunity to get rid of some of the stronger players who you don't want to face post-merge.
Yeah, I agree. And now the question becomes to me, if we see Manano go on to lose again, whether or not we see Alicia or Christina go, because he's promised the world to Alicia, although he's also made it clear that that doesn't really mean much to him. But he said, you've got to trust me. I'm going to be taking out the women on your own tribe, but you've got to trust me. I'm not going to screw you over. And I think Colton would actually be smart in not screwing Alicia over. And that's why I think if we do see Manano go again, just to skip ahead of it, we saw the Monica boot this time. And I think next time we probably will see a Christina boot if they do go again, just because Alicia is someone I think Colton sees as she may be grating enough that I could maybe win a final tribal council against her. And I do think, for as much as I despise Colton as an individual, I think when it comes to Survivor, in terms of thinking, he understands how the game works. And he knows he needs to take really unlikable people with him. And I think Alicia is one of very few people that he would ever even have a prayer against. And even that's a long shot.
Right. But let's assume for a minute that Colton wasn't being such a dick to people, that he was actually playing a decent social game, and he had a good chance to beat a fair number of people. Do you think it still would have been correct to team up with Alicia there? Because I have to imagine that he talked to all three of the women individually and was able to kind of reverse engineer the fact that Monica and Christina were on the out somehow. I mean, I assume they would have volunteered that information to him. So, in that spot, wouldn't you want to take out Alicia in this hypothetical scenario?
Yeah, but I don't know. I think Colton... that's a hypothetical that's never ever going to exist because Colton is aware of what an asshole he is, I think. And I think if he's someone like Todd where he can win many combinations of final tribal council. There's someone like Rafe, for instance. Rafe is an extreme example where he's going to just auto win every time he makes the finals. Alicia, I don't know. It's one of those, I guess the argument can be made like keep your friends close, keep your enemies closer. And if you kind of get in with Alicia, maybe post-merge you can exploit some of that. But at the same time, I don't really even know how worth discussing that is, just because I think he has to keep Alicia around for now if he truly wants to win the game. And just, you asked me about 20 minutes ago whether or not I like the Monica boot, and I finally am willing to answer. Yeah, I do. And I think exactly for the reasons that Colton laid out, which is Christina's not going to be a threat at all post-merge in terms of rallying support against him. Alicia is someone who seems to really want to trust him, which I think is important. She's aware that her life is in his hands. And I think she's made it clear, listen, I am willing to do what you want me to do as long as I stay in this game. And I honestly tend to believe her form now. And we'll see what happens if the women go to the merge with the numbers. But I think Alicia is someone who is going to have a hard time reconnecting with those three four more popular girls that are now on Solani when they now have options to go with Troyzane and Jay. But it's just a long story short, Monica, I think, was by far the biggest threat from a post-merge perspective. And I absolutely hate to see her go. But I think it was legitimately like a no-brainer at that point.
Yeah, I think the prime example of stupidity in this episode was Alicia's attitude to the whole thing, where she seemed to take delight in launching what she called, quote, the best blindside ever played, which, firstly, it's inaccurate because there's no way that it's the best blindside ever played, not even close. Like, if you've watched a season of Survivor before, there's no way you make that statement.
The strongest member of a minority got voted out? What a blindside.
Right? Secondly, it's like, I can understand Alicia wanting to jump over to Colton and cling on as hard as she can, because she knows that the men outnumber the women, she needs to protect herself. But she should see that as an unfortunate thing that she has to do to progress in the game. Not something which she should rejoice in doing, and voting out someone who might still be willing to align with her. It's idiotic. I don't understand it.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you want to talk about Tarzan for a little bit? I know you do.
Of course I do. Need not even ask.
Tarzan was kind of quiet for a while in this episode after having a couple really good episodes, or at least really visible episodes, and then we see, you know, the as Manano is preparing to go to Tribal Council, Colton's telling Tarzan, all right, it's going to be Monica, which is fine, except Tarzan doesn't really know who Monica is and needs to be reminded, and now he has. Yeah.
I'd be worried if I was Colton. Like, I get to the final or something, and Tarzan's on the jury, and he just forgets to write my name down or something. And someone else ends up winning because Tarzan can't be bothered to understand the instructions properly.
Well, he has nominal aphasia, which is a real thing. It's basically just the medical term for bad with names. And speaking of medicine, he is a plastic surgeon. He is a doctor. I'm sure he's been in the medical field for like at least 30, 35 years. Well, point being, this is directly lifted from a post Gary Wise, a good friend of the show, patron saint of the show, Gary Wise, made in the thread this morning, which is they're painting Tarzan to look like an absolute buffoon when he's clearly a very intelligent guy in real life. And I was wondering, as Tarzan's number one fan, how you felt about that? Because one would imagine that as a plastic surgeon, he's able to put two and two together on a fairly regular basis.
I would be very worried if Tarzan was my plastic surgeon. Like, if I knew he was operating my arm, I would want, like, a massive banner with an arrow pointing to my arm. Like, I would want it, like, printed in triplicate, just making sure he knew. Like, I'd be worried that I end up with, like, my finger stapled to my leg, or, like, a femoral artery sticking out of my brain or something. Like, I'd be worried if Tarzan was my plastic surgeon. But anyway, I think...
Hold up. Just if I can, hold on. One sec. Do you think that's going to be do you think his medical practice could face some fallout from this, from him being portrayed as kind of like this lunatic who maybe he's not going to get his license renewed?
That's a good question, actually. I don't know. I mean,
if I go in and he's my doctor, I think, oh wow, it's the guy from Survivor, but where's my doctor?
Yeah, like if he's good at the medicine, I can't imagine that he suffers any actual repercussions from this. But there's an outside shot that he's employing the strategy that Philip Shepherd said he was employing, where he pretends to be an idiot so that he gets dragged to Final Tribal, at which point he turns into some, you know, massively lucid rhetorician and puts on this bravura performance and ends up convincing people that he's a smart guy and takes home the win or whatever. That is not going to happen, realistically, but I want to pretend that it might so that I have a good sweat in case he makes Final Tribal.
Yeah, and, you know, it was actually kind of at Tribal Council we saw him talking, Jeff talking back and forth between he and Leaf. And Leaf, as we've mentioned before, not a great public speaker. And Leaf is kind of, as Tarzan points out, Leaf comes up with a neologism, which is, as Tarzan pointed out, is when, if for anyone familiar with the show Trailer Park Boys, which is a fantastic show, there's a character named Ricky who is big on these, where he's trying to use a big word, but he doesn't know the word itself, so he makes a word that kind of sounds like it, and it's basically just similar consonants and vowel structure, but it's not the actual word itself, and it's often used for the sake of comedy. But I thought I was impressed that Tarzan immediately knew what the word was, and it's interesting to see a guy who we've just seen painted as kind of this outspoken and outlandish kind of fool, come up and really be delivering on the intellectual front when it comes, at least in terms of vocabulary, as Probst first pointed out. But to have that kind of quicker mind when it comes to seemingly everything but names.
Yeah. Do you know what dropping your assertiveness into a different lodestar is? Because I've been trying to figure this out since Wednesday night, and I am bum puzzled, as Jay would say.
nailed it. No, I don't know what that means. No, I don't. Sorry, I couldn't help you out with that.
Maybe this time we need to do that. But while we're on the subject, I wanted to ask you. This is the big question of the week. Do you think Tarzan is the only plastic surgeon that Chelsea knows?
And that's a good question. I actually hadn't considered this, but my gut reaction is that yes, that Chelsea is that Tarzan is the only plastic surgeon she knows, and maybe that's just wishful thinking. But I there are women out there who just win the genetic lottery, and I think Chelsea was one of them.
Do you think this is why she's appeared to be brain dead for most of the season? Like she had Tarzan operate on her and accidentally just transplanted her brain into her chest or something.
You know, Dom, that's exactly what I was thinking. Those were my—I don't know how you put that together, but that was exactly my hypothesis, and I was embarrassed to put it out there because I know it sounds stupid. But that was exactly what it was. Now, Tarzan, probably not the only plastic surgeon Monica knows, by the way. But Monica, you're doing great for 40, sweetheart. Yeah. Well, no, I mean, come on. So let's talk about the next episode. And
hold on.
Go ahead. Sorry.
While we're needlessly objectifying the women. Can we talk about all the things we could do with Kim's abs? Because these are, it's like a washing board. It's fantastic.
You could probably wash your clothes on them. they remind me of, this is going to be an old school reference. Kim Powers from Africa had those abs too. But, Kim definitely getting it done with the ab workouts.
She has more abs than half of the men on the New Monono tribe. Like, you can see why they feel so outmatched.
Yeah, actually, someone had a great confessional where it's like, you could take the guys off of the Solani tribe, and just the women from Solani would run over the current Monono tribe. So let's go into next time on Survivor, and that is what we're going to be seeing next week.
Okay, so before we move on, I want to talk about Jonas quickly, because Jonas expressed surprise this episode to the surprise of no one except himself. It's like, it seems like whenever Colton does or says anything, we cut to Jonas saying, Colton does this, and I'm like, what? Like, why is Jonas like trying to build himself up a Cody figure or something? What's going on?
I don't know. And actually, that's a great point. And I wish someone had pointed that that kind of trend out in the previous episodes of our podcast. But it was interesting. You know, obviously, I mentioned the same thing last week for those of you who didn't listen to the episode, and it was funny to we actually got two Jonas obligatory I'm like what confessionals. In terms of where something crazy happens, and then all he has to say is, what? But yeah, Jonas actually, let's talk about Jonas, because I thought he had a good episode this week. I thought he was certainly visible, and I thought, you know, he'd kind of gone below Troizan. I think Troizan had kind of emerged as the clear number one from the men. And I was actually kind of curious earlier in this podcast, you said Jonas, you may have had even close to drawing dead to win at this point. And I imagine that's not so much out of edit, but just more out of logistics. I thought
this
had a great episode. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, more out of editing, actually, because it seemed like his whole tribe was being destroyed by the editors, and he wasn't shielded from that treatment in any way. Like, he was lumped in with the rest of the tribe. We weren't shown him doing something stupid explicitly, but it's not like Jonas was able to say, look, everyone else in my tribe is an idiot, and I'm a genius or whatever. He was included with those guys.
Well, here's the thing. There was, you know, in the preview after last week, after last week's episode, we saw just a very short clip of Jonas saying, I'll be Colton's bitch. And then we get that full quote in context this week. It changes it a bit. But and there was some discussion in the 2+2 Survivor discussion thread about that quote. And I guess some people interpreted it as, oh, that quote now buries Jonas for sure because he's just saying, oh, I'm just going to ride Colton to the end. I'm just a coattail rider, whatever. But I actually interpreted it as like, listen, this is the best plan of action for me right now. I'm cognizant of that fact. I'm going to go ahead and pursue this plan. And I thought that was, I thought that was even not really a winner quote, but not, I didn't think it was a doomsday quote or anything.
Yeah, it's just that I don't think they would have portrayed Colton as this mega villain if someone who was closely associated with him was going to win. The closest analog might be Samoa, where we see Russell and Natalie, and then we have this confessional from Natalie saying, I'm going to let Russell take me to him because he thinks he can beat me. But I think that's of a different sort than Durst's confessional, where he was kind of making light of his own submissiveness, if you like.
We also saw it in Heroes vs. Villains with Sandra and Russell. Granted, that was towards the end. But well, he said, but you know, we got the same quote out of Sandra, who said, Russell's going to take me because he thinks he's going to beat me, but I don't know about that.
But the thing is that Sandra is always portrayed as opposed to Russell for the entire season.
That's true.
And eventually she becomes this super genius who's using him for her own ends or whatever, which, I mean, we can debate the truth of that, but that's the way it's portrayed anyway.
I want to talk about Sandra, actually, briefly, because this week we saw the Sandra 7-Up commercial. Would you, thoughts on that?
I was not paying attention during any of the 7-Up commercials. I think I muted the screen as soon as I saw Sandra's face.
Yeah, it was interesting. And this is, I know Sandra is not originally an English speaker, but I feel like from what we saw of her on the show, she's always been completely intelligible and everything. You know, like, you can fully understand her. She doesn't have an accent or anything. But I thought on the 7-Up commercial, she really played up like her. I think she's Puerto Rican or whatever. I felt like her accent was really, really thick in that commercial. Granted, I'm sure you had it on mute, so you probably can't relate to what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's an interesting talking point, and I have no idea what you're on about.
Yeah, okay, it's fine. Let's talk about this medevac, because that's what we're going to see next episode. The initial concern, obviously, and someone pointed out in the thread, and now it's kind of building a bit of momentum, is that this medevac is going to be Kim.
Right. I think the spoiler alert, if people feel this discussion is going too far, obviously we don't read spoilers, this is all speculation, but I understand some people are aware of this sort of thing, so tune out now or mute temporarily if that's what you're worried about. I think the reason that people are thinking this might be Kim is that the title for the next episode is Thanks for the Souvenir. And so for every episode, the title is a quote given by one of the contestants in the show in that episode. So here, I think people are assuming that the souvenir is Kim's idol, which we found this episode, and that this is something that she says as she's being airlifted out or whatever. What do you think about this? I mean, it's an interesting theory, but I'm not sure how much I buy into it.
Yeah, it seems just too on the nose for me. But I know in the past a lot of their episode titles have been just that on the nose. But this seems, you know, just revealing it this previous episode, I honestly feel like that's just going to be a complete – I think someone may get like a scar or so, or someone may just get injured and they now have a scar as like a souvenir or whatever. But not related to the medevac. But I don't know that the souvenir quotes is going to be coming from the medevac person. And maybe that's just me just getting completely out-leveled by the editors.
Right. Well, I think it might be a mistake to say that it's too obvious, the connection between the quote and Kim's idol. But I think the editors don't care about things being obvious. I think they don't, like I said previously, I don't think they give that much credit to the viewing audience. They're willing to put in things like that so that, you know, the 50% who are kind of registering it might, you know, begin to think about it like that. But I think most of the audience, firstly, won't know the episode title, and secondly, won't even register that it might apply to Kim.
Yeah, well, the other thing, the reason I when I first saw someone post in 2+2 that they thought, oh, here's why it may be Kim, just as speculation, I thought to myself, obviously back to the first medevac, and that was Michael Scoopin, and he was a very visible and likable character and kind of perceived as like the leader of the Kucha tribe, and then out of nowhere falls into the fire and he's just gone, and it's devastating for that whole tribe, and we obviously ultimately see them go on to go down in numbers post-merge because of that. I think if Michael Scoopin never happened, that Kim would be off of my list of possible medevacs, just because every other one we've seen has been portrayed pretty, either under the radar or even to the point of maybe negativity. But Kim, yeah, it scares me, but I could honestly see it being her. The concern, give me a minute. The concern being when we see Jeff out on the island and we see Dr. Ramona, who we've seen every season out there, they're talking about a high, I think they're talking about heartbeat per minute, and it was up around the 120s, which is really high, and I don't know what kind of accident Kim can get into to make that happen, compared to someone like Leaf or Kat.
Yeah, going back to the other thing, I'm not sure that all the medevacs have been portrayed that negative, because it seems like in all of the, in the episodes in which they are medevac, they obviously have a very positive edit, and the editors, knowing that this is going to happen, they kind of set this up a few episodes previously, where we see a gradual kind of shift towards a positive edit before we get this massive spike and the person's taken out. But on the second point about the heart rate quote, I agree that this is more likely to apply to someone like Leaf, particularly given his stature, I think. I'm not sure about the biology, but I'm pretty sure that he's more likely to have a high heart rate based on a small accident than someone like Kim would be. But also because we in the promo shot, so in the Next Time on Survivor segment, we see Christina running out of the forest, presumably after having heard this news, or presumably running to call for help. And then we see her in the confessional saying, oh my god, this is terrible, or whatever. That suggests to me that it's someone on Monono and not on Solani. And I don't think that's too obvious at all. Like, again, I don't think the audience is making that connection.
The thing is, I'm just so wary every single time on the next, on the previews for the next episode, whatever big event they're setting up never, ever, ever plays out as they're setting it up, which is why, you know, and again, I hate to, it just gets me in this battle in my own head about, because the shots we see, you mentioned we see Christina, which is true, but we see a shot of Christina just running a bit through the woods, and then we just see a confessional of Christina saying something along the lines of, this is crazy or something. No, we do not see her at all in terms of actually talking about specifically someone getting medevaced or anything that would suggest, which leads me to believe that the Christina thing is just a red herring that they are so big on in these next time in these previews, and that's why I would say the person's more likely to be Solani.
But if they want to hint at this somehow, they need to show somebody talking about it. And if it is somebody on Monono, the most logical choice is somebody else on Monono, because they're the most likely to have some kind of confessional about it. I see your point, but I don't think it's analogous to, say, in Heroes vs. Villains, where we see the previous shot of Boss and Rob lying on the floor with someone holding his head, and yeah, he's talking about his getting the best for him and stuff. Once you see that, you know that Rob's not going home. But here, no one specific has been suggested as the person who's being medevaced. It's not like we see, like, Leaf lying in his coffin, like, pretending, dying or whatever. We see Christina doing all the stuff, but it's not specific at all. Like, it could be anyone on Monono at this point. So I don't think that makes it more likely to be someone on Solani.
I don't know. I think they like to just mess with us. It's kind of like in poker, it's like the editors just always take the weak equals strong line in terms of editing the next time on Survivor thing. It seems like they always just try to get it as exciting as possible, but it never really plays out remotely like how they say it. Not never, obviously, there are exceptions, but I think they really like to mislead people and get us talking about something that and speculating about stuff that we're never going to see, because I think the intent here is, oh, who on Monono is going to be the one medevaced, and we're going to tune in next week, and it's going to be Solani.
Yeah, well, let's think about who it could be. So on Monono, I'm 100% confident it's not Colton, because I think they wouldn't put all this work into making him this mega villain if he was just going to be abruptly taken out in the middle of the pre-match. I don't think they would do that.
I agree.
I don't think it's going to be Jonas, because he's received a pretty well-crafted edit, I think, and edit would speak to his long-term prospects. So again, I don't think he's going to be randomly disappearing in the middle of episode 6. Beyond that, it's probably not going to be Christina, because we see Christina being the one to react to this, so logically it can't really be.
Although, wouldn't that be the ultimate level if it was her?
It would be, but logistically, I'm not sure how they would set that up.
Well, that would make so much sense in terms of the editors just trying to fuck with us on the next time on Survivor. I hadn't considered that, but
I mean,
Christina's the only one I had immune, but now I'm thinking about it, and that would have been perfect.
If they did that, then I'd take my hat to them, because that would be brilliant, but I don't know. It could be Leaf, like we said. It could be Elise, although that might be unlikely. I'm not really sure. I think it probably might be Leaf, just because we would expect him to have some kind of overly positive, sympathetic edit, and we haven't really seen anything from him. That makes me think that they don't want people to become too attached to him if he does, in fact, get taken out next episode. Beyond that, if it is someone on Solani, it could well be Kim, just because there's no obvious other candidate. Like, yeah, sure, it might be Kat or whoever, but there's nothing to suggest that it's her in particular.
No, Solani, I think it's... I mean, Kat obviously is that heart condition, but I think Solani, it's more of just a toss-up. In terms of... Because of the edit that we saw, they're making it look like it's going to be Monono. I think Leaf is obviously, in terms of disregarding editor or whatever, probably the most at-risk in terms of health issues out on the island, just because of the stature, as you mentioned. And I don't know the biology behind it or anything, but I would imagine that he may be a bit more prone to physical, like, heart conditions. And Tarzan is the other one, just because of his age, but I don't think he's getting a medevac edit by any means. And Leaf, I think your point about Leaf, actually, is very, very good about, for the first time with a stunt cast, we didn't get the episode 1 reveal. In terms of, with Kelly Bruno and with Chad Christy, they all have their...
In fairness, there's not really much you can reveal. Like, it's not like he's standing on stilts and then he pulls down his trousers and jumps out and he's suddenly 4 feet.
No, I know. But in terms of, there's always them saying, there's always the shot of them sitting their whole tribe down and saying, listen, I have this, this is a disability, but I don't want this to get in the way. And the whole tribe says, oh yeah, you know, I look completely past that. And they get confessionals of people saying, oh, I'm totally on board with Chad or whatever, just for example. And Leaf, we didn't see the day one sit down, hey guys, this is an issue that I have to deal with, but hopefully it's not that big of a deal. We didn't get to see that with Leaf. And I think your point about the editors maybe not wanting to make him such an overly sympathetic character, potentially because of a medevac, is a very good point. So I think Leaf is probably the leading candidate, just generally speaking. Although, I fear for Kim, though I hope she's getting such an active edit that I don't know why they would do that if she's going to go out so early, other than the Michael Scoopin edit where this person was in charge and just got screwed by nature.
This may be wishful thinking on my part, because I think Kim getting taken out would kill the season, pretty much. I mean, we still have a lot of good characters, but without Kim there, I can't think of a winner that I would be happy with coming out of this season. Like, I can imagine, like, Troy Zan taking two random goats to the end and winning or something, but I'm not going to look back and think, oh, Troy Zan, great winner, great season. The season would be great in spite of the person who won it. And I think, honestly, Kim is the only one who would make for a quote-unquote good winner at this point.
I certainly don't agree with that, I guess, just to make the long story short. Kim would probably be, in terms of best generally, in terms of most equity in a random season, of course it's Kim. Out of the people remaining and out of the people who started, at least based on what we've seen so far, I think Kim's playing a fantastic game, and I agree that the season would be... would lose a massive part if it were Kim. And again, hopefully it's not. But I certainly take issue. I think this could be a great season pretty much no matter who wins with there are some exceptions, obviously. But I think I'm happy. It depends on your definition of great in terms of it's certainly not going to be a great season in the sense of like strategically. It's not going to be heroes and villains. It's not going to be fans versus favorites. It's not going to be China. It's not going to be token chains in terms of just, having really, really capable players making high-level decisions and giving us great stuff to analyze. But it's still, I think it's going to be entertaining, and that's really what I'm interested in. We do this podcast, and we talk so much about strategy and tactics and social aspects of it. But really, the reason all of us, I think, tune in week to week is to see these characters, and I think this season has some fantastic characters. And like last season, it was the same way. There were just so many great characters, and I think we're being set up. We're not even halfway through this season yet. We're barely a third of the way through this season. And there's still so much more time for these characters to develop, and that's something that really excites me. And I think, honestly, regardless of the boot order, I could see myself being very happy with many, many combinations of endgame players here.
Okay. Maybe I just put
I'm thrilled we disagree about stuff now.
It's possible I put more weight onto the win of the season than you do, I guess. But I don't know. I mean, yeah, I think that's just a difference in how we approach watching the show, I guess.
Yeah, I put a lot of weight on the winner after they've already won, but as I'm enjoying it, as I'm watching the season, it's not really going through my mind outside of a strategic outside of trying to deduce who's going to win. It's not as I'm watching each episode saying, oh, well, I'm not enjoying the season as much because now I can't get a satisfying winner. I still take it pretty much episode by episode, and then in retrospect, certainly, yes. There are certainly some unsatisfying winners in retrospect. Trust me, I've had several finales just ruined, most notably probably Heroes versus Villains, in terms of just the least satisfying winner.
Yeah, right. But I find it difficult to kind of divorce the season from the identity of the person who won it. For instance, if Rob hadn't won Redemption Island, I would have just, like, that season, which I thought was actually pretty underrated. I like that season. Whenever I rewatch it, I enjoy it more than a lot of seasons. If Rob hadn't won, that would not be the case at all, because I know what's coming, and I can't alter my perception of the season to fit that, if you like. So, say if Matt had won, or Natalie, God forbid, somehow won, or Ashley, or whoever, like that would have altered my perception of the season and affected the way in which I rewatch it if and when I do.
That's true. No. And then, like I said, I think in retrospect, I'm much more... an unsatisfying winner during a rewatch kind of is a lot more difficult to watch whereas you watch some seasons like China, for instance, I think is one that's always easy to rewatch because Todd is so fun to watch.
Well,
or even, you know, boring.
Maybe not.
Oh, not for you. Okay.
I'm not a Todd fan, but anyway, that's by the by.
I thought Tom was great. Yeah, I think in retrospect, but in terms of as I'm enjoying it now and as we're doing this podcast, at this point at least, I'm honestly happy with pretty much anyone winning. Although I obviously have preferences, and at the top of that list at this point, obviously, is Jonas, just because I want to get Rob Sesternino on here.
Well, isn't all we need for Jonas to last longer than Troyzan?
That's true, yeah. It's not a must-win. It's just last longer. So hopefully Troyzan's the medevac, and we just back into getting Sesternino.
We just pink it right here, yeah.
That would be excellent. Yeah, anything else for Survivor this week?
No, that about does it for me, I think.